Hey everyone, welcome back. So when I was doing my undergrad for my bachelor's degree, I had to go see my guidance counselor. And every semester they would pretty much advise me on, you know, what courses I need to take for that semester. And in one particular semester, they told me, hey, you got some electives that you need to take. And so, you know, here's some options, but maybe check out this history course that you need to do, which I ended up doing a bunch of history courses and would have actually obtained two bachelor's degrees, one in history, but I was two classes shy of a second bachelor's because my daughter was born at that time and I already just obtained one bachelor's, so I couldn't wrap up the second. So anyways, I took the history class, and at the time I wasn't very big into history or anything like that. But I took it because, hey, I have to take an elective. And there was something about that history course. The subject matter, certainly, probably also the style of the teacher, the way she explained everything, it made for me history fascinating. And the bug bit me. I got all into it at that time. Every kind of history that you can imagine, from Civil War history, American history, Latin American history, world history, but especially church history. And that kind of put me down the path that I'm on today. As a theologian, as one who is very interested in things of church history, I've read a ton on it. I can say it goes back to that class. And having looked at the question of history from every angle, one thing that I've noticed is we often don't learn from our mistakes. History repeats itself, they say, right? We often make the same mistakes. We hear that pretty often. But another observation, and one related, is that oftentimes, whenever something horrible is going on, the people of that generation are silent. They don't speak up. And we look back on it and we judge them and we say, how could they? How could they not speak up? This horrible thing was going on in their day and age, and they couldn't say anything. They couldn't use their voices for good. Instead of speaking up for the innocent, they're wasting their time either defending evil or promoting stupidity and other things that are absolutely irrelevant and will never add up or amount to anything significant. We judge them, right? Don't think that our generation is exempt from that. Just because we're living in it, don't think we're the exception. People will look back on our generation. And my question to you is, what will they say about us? Will they say we were silent? Will they say that we defended evil? Will they say we were preoccupied with stupidity rather than the things that mattered? What will they say about us? That ties into what I want to take a look at today and want to discuss with you all today. I saw an interview that Tucker Carlson just had with Megyn Kelly. Of course, Megyn Kelly, we've been seeing a lot about her in the news because there was that whole deal with Ben Shapiro wanting Megyn Kelly to denounce Candace Owens. And she refused to do so. And so she comes on to Tucker to talk a little bit about that, but they also speak about other things. And I want to take a look at some of that because I think that it's very relevant to a message that we really need to consider today. So I'm going to share my screen and we're going to go through it together. Please let me know if there's any difficulty in hearing the audio. I'm going to go ahead and enable it and you should be able to see it right around now. Let's go ahead and dive in together. We're going to start around the 1 hour mark. So let's dive in and see what she says specifically about the Iraq war and propaganda at that time and suppression of free speech on the question. Take a look.
and CIA to do all kinds of things that are shocking. So that's, I guess, my concern. If like all of a sudden you become permanently at war, your own population in some ways becomes the government's enemy, I've noticed.
Well, look, we were in a way a part of that during the Iraq war.
Yeah, I know.
At Fox, right? Like they didn't allow, and we didn't allow people who were criticizing the war a platform. We yes. mocked them and made fun of them because I think we thought it was our duty to defend the war. And I see Fox News doing that right now. There's not really a skeptical voice over there about what we're doing in Venezuela. And I'm fine with the people who support the Venezuela move. Then I've been having them on my show all week and giving the president his due to hear what are the detractors saying and what are the supporters saying. And that's up for the audience to make up their mind. If they disagree with me on my stance, that's fine. It's great. No more power to them. But, you know, that's not the job when you're on Fox News. And when I was there, I'll speak for myself. It was very clear to me what the job was, which was to root for it, to defend it, period. And not to allow skeptics on to express, you know, why they thought it was a bad idea, but instead to mock them and to belittle them, which has an effect of shaming people out of the view, at least maybe not the code pinks of the world, but like normies, whether they're Republicans yes, or independents right. who would come on Fox, they understood that message is going to get you banned. You're not going to get an invitation back because this is not a place to come for a full and fair discussion. So yeah, we've already slipped into that in our past, our not so distant past, and look what it got us. You know, the Iraq war was not a good idea. I wish I hadn't defended it. I know you feel the same. Yeah. I wish I had let more dissenting voices on and really listened to them to see whether they had a good point. And I think now more than ever, that's why independent channels like the ones that we're operating on currently are incredibly important, because there is no agenda. You know, people want to say you're bought and paid for. You're not bought and paid for by anybody. You're totally independent, as am I. I don't take anybody's money other than like Cozy Earth, but they're not involved in this conflict.
Does that sound familiar? The propaganda with the Iraq war. The shaming of people who criticized it at the time, who didn't go along with that agenda and with the propaganda. And good for her and for Tucker kind of admitting they were part of that and shouldn't have been. It shows growth. Good on them. Hey, we've all grown, right? And we need to continue to grow. So I don't hold that against them. I'm glad they learned from their mistake on this particular point. And it looks like they don't want to make that same mistake today. You know, you might think that their comments are most relevant to, you know, Venezuela or maybe Greenland and stuff like that. Okay, yeah, there might be some application there. But no, what they're talking about here has especially application with the question of Israel. And that's actually what they're going to talk about here in a moment, more than anything about Venezuela, Greenland, anything like that. The same propaganda for the Iraq war, which turned out to be a disaster, which turned out to be based on lies, all of that is still taking place today. Are we going to learn from our mistake? It's a question that remains to be seen. Skipping ahead just very slightly here to the 1 hour and 9 minute mark, they're going to tie this into the question of Israel and criticizing Israel. Take a look at this.
A microphone, that's fine. We're not anti-free speech, but we just need to pressure and cancel everyone around them for continuing a relationship with them. And it's absolutely disgusting. I heard you say this not long ago, and I completely related. I'd rather die than do that. And now that they've made that the stakes of my so-called friendships with them, I really won't do it. Now I don't care what anybody says. Like, I'll never do it now. Even if I have actual disagreements that I otherwise would raise, hell no, because I'm not raising the fist and saying BLM at the table, and I'm not bending the knee to these bullies who think they can control me.
I always think to myself, I don't think I've ever said an anti-Semitic thing in my life. I'm positive you haven't. They never point to anything that's anti-Semitic.
No.
But what's interesting is while the rest of us are having these debates, a bunch of different states, including the state of Florida, the most important state in a lot of ways, has codified anti-Semitism as a crime, and they've defined, not anti-anything, just anti-Semitism, and they've defined it in a way that is so expansive that criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic.
But first of all, it's weird. So you can have people racist against blacks all day long. You can have people racist against white people all day long. That is completely legal. But if somebody is racist towards a Jew, that is something that has to be codified in law. Help me make sense of that. I'm just trying to understand that. I mean, you would think, look, either racism is going to be entirely illegal or not at all. Why is it that only certain groups have this privileged status in our society? That's really odd. But also the issue of conflating anti-Semitism with the critique of Israel. You know, I just showed y'all on the show the other day where a really high up person at Meta tells us that they on Facebook and Instagram ban anybody who criticizes Israel, and they deem that hate speech and anti-Semitism. And they straight up said, we ban anyone who says that Zionists control the media. And I said, wait, hold on. So Zionists are controlling the media to ban anybody who says that Zionists control the media. I'm sorry, they're not doing themselves any favors when they do that. They're actually proving the point. But here, we start to see this new phenomenon of if you critique Israel, you're anti-Semitic, which is ridiculous. One does not necessarily mean the other. Sometimes it may mean that. Very often it doesn't, however. And you can't make that leap automatically. And I actually became sensitive to this because 6 years ago, I made a statement right here on this channel when it was a very young channel and nobody was watching. You want to know what that statement was? It was really controversial at the time. You want to know? The statement was, we should share the gospel with Jews. Sounds incredibly anti-Semitic, right? Well, that's exactly what people accused me of, which is laughable if anybody knows anything about me and my history. I had a swarm of people jump on X, at the time it was Twitter, and on my YouTube channel, flood me with all sorts of hate speech, and they accused me of anti-Semitism. And I just thought, this is so ridiculous, because, again, if anybody knows anything about my background, are you serious? You think I'm anti-Semitic? Is this a joke? That showed me that this term is being thrown around so loosely, and this accusation is being used to silence people for things that have nothing to do with anti-Semitism. So I became aware of this a good 6 years ago. And so when I started seeing that happen here with anybody who criticizes Israel, labeling them anti-Semitic, I knew exactly what was happening. And maybe 6 years ago, if you were labeled an anti-Semite, that actually meant something. Nowadays, most people don't even care, which is tragic because I do think anti-Semitism is wrong. And it should mean something. But it's been overplayed. It's been abused. It's that card that has just been so overused that it's become meaningless. And it ends up actually undermining the Jewish community to overplay it, because now people are no longer going to be sympathetic to the Jewish community because everybody's being labeled an anti-Semite, people who are not anti-Semites, the vast majority of them. So I get where they're coming from here. Let's continue.
The claim that someone is Israel first is a crime in the state of Florida. DeSantis signed this. And I'm just like, well, wait a second. I mean, I don't think most people even know that that happened. And plenty of states have done that. And so I think we're going to wake up one morning with European hate crimes laws written in a way that is not fair at all, that doesn't affect justice, and is basically just another form of identity politics at the point of a gun. I think this is going to happen.
It is identity politics. It really is. And
at the point of the gun, that scares me, because I will say I do fear that one day me and others, we're going to be arrested for having criticized Israel. They're going to pull up some tweet. There was this tweet that you posted in 2025 being critical of Israel. You're going to jail now. I think that day may come. I could see it go one of two ways. This country will either go down that path and start prosecuting anybody who was ever critical of Israel, or we will stop funding this insane idea and stop funding what Israel is doing in Gaza. And we'll start to actually think about our country first. It's going to go one of two ways, but I am afraid that, hey, one day they might throw us in jail. They've already done everything that they can to silence plenty of people on social media. There's a lot of accounts that are shadow banned. Yours truly. If you're watching this stream right now, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you can actually see this video right now. Because on every single platform, they don't share my content with the vast majority of the people who are even subscribed and following me. And it coincided with whenever I began to criticize Israel. But you know what? That's nothing compared to what the people of Gaza who have been going through. And so I can't even complain, to be honest. All right, but let's continue.
I'll tell you the number one reason, apart from the free speech principles, I guess the number two reason we shouldn't be doing that, it will cause anti-Semitism.
Well, exactly.
It absolutely will cause, in the same way that now, like people don't understand, Fuentes, you may be familiar with him. They don't understand him, right? Like, why are people flocking to Nick Fuentes? You know what? It's because a lot of young white men in particular have been told for years now that identity is everything. It's everything. It does matter. What is your in-group? And those are your compadres. And you better get, you know, some alignment there, because we're factioning now into groups. And you better figure out which one is yours. And so there are a lot of young white men who have accepted the messaging of the BLMers and the wokesters on the left and have understood now, like, you know what? I don't want to follow what Tucker Carlson is saying, that we don't judge people like that, even though we're on the right. That I'm accepting the messaging that's been taught to me by my teachers, K through 12, by my university professors for 4 years, by my grad school professors, by the media, by corporate America, all of them, which is identity does matter. Your very goodness will be rated on whether you accept this premise. And they've accepted it, and now they're leaning into white identity politics and then being shamed because the leader of those happens to be Nick Fuentes. So that what the Jews who push those laws, and it is a lot of Jews down in Florida and a lot of Jewish people in New York too, they think that the answer to anti-Semitism, which is a problem to some extent, of course, is to get themselves recategorized as one of the protected DEI groups. And of course it's not. The answer is to demolish DEI. The answer is to stop separating us by group. And the more you start cracking down on people's thought crimes against Israel or even their anti-Semitism, truly, like, this is America. You're allowed to be a racist. You're allowed to be a misogynist. You're allowed to be an anti-Semite.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing, right? And I see racism every day, again, against pretty much every kind of group. I see racism towards whites, racism towards blacks, racism towards Jews. I see racism towards everyone. It's unfortunately very common. But there appears to be only laws against one particular group. And I have to wonder, why is that?
You're not allowed to, like, make hiring and firing decisions based on that. But that's not what we're arguing over here. We're talking about what's in your head and your heart. The more you try to criminalize that or ruin someone's life over those thoughts, the more you engender the very hatred you say you're objecting to. And this is the reason, Tucker, that I tweeted out that it's not Tucker Carlson and his views on Israel that are causing anti-Semites. It is more Ben Shapiro's and the Barry Weiss's of the world. And of course, the ADL then called me an anti-Semite, because what happens is, you see the cycle, right? Like, you get attacked. I didn't attack Barry or Ben. They attacked me. Again, just because I wouldn't defriend people. They attacked me. I said to them, that behavior is going to cause anti-Semites. Like, you shouldn't do that, because this is actually undermining the very thing you say you care about. Then he swoops in the ADL to say, you're an anti-Semite for saying that to them. You're not allowed to defend yourself against their attacks by saying, hey, you're the one who's bringing more hatred into this argument.
Exactly.
Because so on and on it goes. But I genuinely believe it. And I genuinely don't want additional Jew hatred happening in this country.
I don't either.
Most normal American Jewish people would never make Israel the stakes of a relationship.
Yeah, I hear what she's saying there. I do think, unfortunately, this is going to backfire, and it does create more anti-Semitism. I think it's this very thing that's triggering it. First of all, what people are seeing Israelis do to Palestinians, that is causing a lot of people to go down the anti-Semitic route. Now, I'm not saying that one necessarily should mean the other or logically follows. No, but what I'm saying is that's the jump that people are making. Because they see that, they go down that path. Or because they're being told, you can't say anything against this group. They're, of course, going to push back and react against that. And sometimes people are going to overreact. And so I think that, unfortunately, this is what's going to create a ton of anti-Semitism. I want to skip ahead just a little bit more to the 1 hour 33 minute mark, and they're going to talk just a little bit more about the question of Israel, but also Megyn Kelly is going to talk about how she feels that she's been given a lot of propaganda and she's now having to rethink that. Take a look.
People, of course, and they've moved all over the map on a lot of issues, but they've never wavered at all on the need for America to be involved in neocon wars. Why is that the red line, do you think?
I mean, I don't know what kind of holdings they have in the military-industrial complex. It's worth asking. I haven't actually taken a look at the Fox News board recently, but they have more money than God. They don't really need to be beholden to anybody on the money front. I do think the Israel front is interesting, though, which is an area that creates neocons, and most neocons are defensive of Israel. And then what's happened on Israel is it used to be you were golden to just defend Israel on everything as a Republican. Like, you were expected to do it. There was absolutely no downside in doing it. And you would only get rewarded for it. And it was the one group that these Republicans could take money from. Just, you want to take $25 million from Miriam Adelson for the East Wing renovation? No problem. No one's going to give you a hard time. She's an American Jewish, you know, entrepreneur. Like, Israel, we all love Israel on the right. It's the crazy leftists that don't like Israel. Our side loves them. And I do believe that's why you have all these records of people who are like, I voted for Israel with Israel 100% of the time. You know, Ted Cruz, like, I wear like a badge of honor. And I do think the Murdochs are probably still in that same mindset.
Yes.
And they do not have their finger on the pulse of the young people who voted Trump last time, who were critical in putting him over the line, and who have started to turn on that mindset, and who do not see Israel, especially now, as totally aligned with American interests and values. And let me just say one other thing on it. I've been asking myself this question, Tucker, because you cover foreign policy a lot and always have. I it's not really my thing. This is not like, I don't think people tune into the MK show because they really want to get the latest on foreign policy. You know, I cover all domestic news, politics, law, culture, all that stuff, hard news. But I'm not huge on foreign policy. I do cover it, but it's not my thing. Like Glenn Greenwald, it's his thing. He lives for it.
Yeah.
And he's great at it. Okay. I do think that even I, as I look back, I'm like, I'm pro-Israel. I say I'm pro-Israel. And I've been asking myself lately, like, How? Like, why exactly am I pro-Israel? And what I've come up with is, well, I was raised Catholic, and, you know, you're kind of taught from a very young age that there's an alignment, Judeo-Christian values, you hear that all the time. You read the Old Testament, you know, like all of it, and you sort of think, okay, yes, I defend the Jews and I'm pro-Israel. Then you get to Fox News and it's like, of course you are, and the Republicans all are, and you're like, okay, I accept that. And you see, like, they're an important country in the Middle East, and I believe what they say, which is they're in a rough neighborhood and people do.
Let me stop there and just say, as a reminder, the Jews of the Old Testament are not necessarily people who claim to be Jews today. And number two, the Israelites of the Old Testament is not necessarily the modern state of Israel. Do keep that in mind.
We want to attack them a lot. So, you know, I understand this is a free democracy, but then you get to the point where you realize, oh, wait a minute. I've been in an organization for 14 years of my formative adult life and professional life, where I wasn't even encouraged or allowed to question any of that. You know, it was just spoon-fed, and I swallowed it because I didn't really care. It wasn't something I was ever really focused on. So I was like, yeah, sure, okay, we love Israel. And only now, Tucker, have I begun to say, like, wait a minute. How much of the narrative that is in our news today has been spoon-fed to me by people who are super pro-Israel at all costs?
Yep, exactly. The answer is a lot of it.
Who won't tell the truth about Israel, no matter what it is, and will cancel you if you don't befriend or defriend people who do. And so this whole thing has made me reevaluate. Like, I'm just starting from square one, basically, on Israel right now. And I'm actually day by day taking a much harder look at who are they? What do they do? How do I find real information on what happened in this war in Gaza?
I had to do that too. I mean, as y'all know, I used to be in favor of the state of Israel. And I was what would be called now a Christian Zionist. I no longer maintain that, but that was my position at one point, and I had to reevaluate it in light of the facts. And so I know exactly what she's going through.
That I will trust, because I do know I'm being propagandized by both sides. And how will I make up my own mind? Even some of the narratives that we hear, like, I'm not a fan of certainly radical Muslims. And I'm not a big fan.
I have a question. We hear a lot about radical Muslims. What about radical Jews? It's a real thing. What about radical Israelis? It's a real thing. But you never hear it called that, do you? Notice how it's always framed that way, right? It will. You'll never hear radical Jews or radical Israelis, even though they are certainly there. And I have to ask the question, why is it you will hear radical Muslims, but you won't hear radical Jews? You also won't hear radical Christians. There have been some terrorists who have used the name of Christianity. They actually exist right now. There are some of them right now. And some of them are also funding genocide. But you don't hear it called that. My question is why? Why is the framing structured this way? Well, let's see what else she says.
Of Islam. I'm going to be honest. The tenets of it, yes, are political and I don't agree with them. But I have dear friends who are Muslims. And I do start to wonder, like, how much of the very negative messaging about all Muslims, and I've been a part of some of that negative messaging. Don't get me wrong. I'm not wavering from my position that, like, it's not great to have an Islamist running New York City. But how much of the narrative has come from people who are just ardently pro-Israel and need me to hate them? Do you know what I mean?
All of it.
So I think it's a fair question, and I'm sort of in my own search mode on.
Good for her. I think she mentioned something about Mamdani being an Islamist. Like him or hate him, good or bad. Look, he's not a practicing Muslim. I don't know how anybody could say he's an Islamist, but okay. this is interesting. Wow. I guess I wasn't expecting her to be so candid about how she's having to think through things and think through the propaganda that she's been told for years now. And I'm having to think through some of that propaganda that was used to defend Israel myself. So yeah, I've certainly been there. Now I want to take a look at what the Pope is saying about war that relates to this. He's saying war is back in vogue. Let's take a look at what Pope Leo XIV is saying.
War is back in vogue, and the zeal for war is spreading. The principle established after the Second World War, which prohibited nations from using force to violate the borders of others, has been completely undermined. Peace is no longer sought as a gift and a desirable good in itself, or in the pursuit of the establishment of the ordered universe willed by God, with a more perfect form of justice among men and women. Instead, peace is sought through weapons as a condition for asserting one's own dominion. This gravely threatens the rule of law, which is the foundation of all peaceful civil coexistence. War is back in vogue, and the zeal for war is spreading. The principle established after the Second World War, which prohibited nations from using force to violate the borders of others, has been completely undermined. Peace is no longer sought as a gift and a desirable good in itself, or in the pursuit of the establishment of the ordered universe willed by God, with a more perfect form of justice among men and women. Instead, peace is sought through weapons as a condition for asserting one's own dominion. This gravely threatens the rule of law, which is the foundation of all peaceful civil coexistence.
Yeah, so he is starting to pick up on what I've noticed as well, and that is it really looks like war is starting to become really popular again. We saw Trump rename the Department of Defense to the Department of War, and we see him he previously told us he was the candidate of peace, but we see he's starting to look like anything but that. And it's getting a lot of people concerned. And I think that that is what the Pope is concerned about here as well. He's observing some of those things. And he's saying, yeah, we need to be aware of this. After World War II, we decided we would start to respect the boundaries of different countries and we would try to avoid war. It looks like that mentality is fading away. I think he's right. And that's scary. I wonder, where is that going to lead us? And it looks like we're all too comfortable with the war that Israel is actually still going on with Gaza, believe it or not. And we have been funding it. And it looks like as a country, we're all too comfortable with that. That needs to change. Will it change though? I sure hope so, because if not, I do fear future generations are going to look back on us and they're going to say, what in the world were they thinking? Now, I want to show you something related to all this. War, propaganda, genocide. I want to show you this video footage that just came out that talks about Israeli quadcopters. You've probably seen this circulating on Twitter. Israeli quadcopters emitting baby sounds, playing sounds of screaming women that allegedly Israel has been using in Gaza since April, it would seem, to lure people out. And whenever they come out, they kill them. I want to take a look at it. Then I want to ask the question, is this true? Is this just propaganda? Let's take a look at it together. It's only 2 minutes long.
جماعة الخير كواد كابتر قتلت صوت أطفال الآن من مخيم إنسارات امبارح استشهدوا شاب طلع مسكين يشوف إيش الصوت في مدرسة طبعا طلع والله قنصوا
In mid-April, we were informed that Israeli quadcopters were emitting bizarre sounds, including baby sounds or women screaming. I went personally to Nusayrat and I interviewed several Palestinians separately, and the testimonies were almost identical. Quadcopters were for two consecutive nights on the 14th and the 15th, I guess, of April. They were emitting baby sounds, playing sounds of screaming women. The quadcopters apparently played these sounds only to lure citizens out of their homes and to find someone to shoot. And this was confirmed by actually the reports that we followed up on at hospitals. There were cases of people getting injured by these quadcopters after going out to figure out what was the sound to try to help.
الصوت كان بيطلع من عباب الدار وقت كبتر من أربع مرات طلعت برضو بين الخيم وقعدت تزاحق ونفس الحاجة رنينا بنعمل في الخيم قلنا لو واحد يطلع إذا لكن نظام صوت أبو أنس الشحرور عندنا في المنطقة في الراس
Wow. Okay, so this is horrifying if true. This would be evil, satanic, disgustingly demonic if true. And I know a lot of people are just going to automatically think, well, wait, how do we know it's true? How do we know it's not just anti-Israel propaganda? Okay, I understand that question. Fair question. I mean, we always need to ask, hey, is this propaganda or not? I get it. But here's the thing. If that's just Israeli propaganda, why doesn't Israel allow independent journalists to go into Gaza right now? The war is supposed to be over, right? Independent journalists still cannot go in. Why is that? If there's nothing to hide, if it's the most moral army on earth, if they're not doing this kind of stuff, then why not allow independent journalists to go in to verify? So again, if it's just propaganda, we should be able to clear this up really easily, correct? But they won't let us clear it up. That's the problem. That's the issue. And if this is real, if this is happening, I have to ask, what else has Israel done and is doing? What else are we going to discover? With the Holocaust, whenever the Allies went in and liberated the people there, they then found out the horrors of what was going on. And even the people of Germany, many of them said, we had no idea what was going on. Maybe we heard things here and there, but we didn't really know the severity of it. Well, they found out afterwards, certainly, right? What are we going to find out happened? And we look back on the Germans at the time of Nazi Germany, and we think, well, if they knew, why didn't they speak out? Why didn't they say anything? Are people going to say the same about us if we have the opportunity to speak out and we don't? And not just speak out about what we know may be going on over there, but also speaking out on the question of us continuing to fund this stuff. We should not be funding this. And if our tax dollars are going to fund this, we should at least be able to know what's going on and what we're funding, right? Just to make sure that this isn't happening, we should know where our tax dollars are going. And yet, we don't know where our tax dollars are going because they will not allow independent journalists to go in and find out and tell us. So we not only need to speak out, we need to stop financially supporting this. And it could be that the tide is going to turn. It could be that our generation is the one that breaks from this yoke, from this tie between America and Israel. It could be our generation that says, no more. We're going to turn off the funding. We're not going to do it anymore. I hope to God that's the case. If we care about babies in the womb, we also need to care about babies outside of the womb. We need to care about this. We can't speak about one without the other. If we just say, oh, I don't care to this kind of stuff, then we have no moral basis at that point to object to abortion and other moral issues. We lack moral credibility at that point. So we need to speak up. We can't be silent. I hope this generation will be the one that changes it. I hope the future generations will look on us and say, good for them. They stood up and they did what was right. I hope they don't condemn us. If you found this helpful and informative, please let me know. Make sure to drop some thoughts there in the comment section. Make sure to hit the like button and hit the subscribe button. We'll see you later. God bless.